Just a note before we start. Our show talks about touchy subjects that may be difficult for some of our listeners. Take care of yourself. If you feel you need to seek help, see the links at the end of our show notes for resources.
Welcome back to Touchy Subjects. I'm Sean.
And I'm Amanda.
And today we are joined by special guest Lauren Powles. So thank you for joining us today, Lauren.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Lauren, do you just quickly want to introduce yourself to our audience?
Yeah, so I'm Lauren. I am a therapist. I work with children and teens, providing therapy for domestic and sexual violence. And I've been in my current role now for about 3.5 years, and I absolutely love it.
Awesome. So the reason that we have Lauren with us today is because February is Teen Dating Violence Awareness Month, and we wanted to take the time today to kind of discuss what teen dating violence is a little bit. We have done an episode on it before, so if you haven't heard that episode, go ahead and check that out. But we really wanted to kind of discuss what impacts on teens domestic violence, specifically teen dating violence, can have on them. So really quickly, just kind of going over what teen dating violence is that it is going to be dating abuse that is taking place, obviously, in a teen dating relationship. Now, I want to preface all of this discussion on saying that teens should have dating relationships because it is a great opportunity for them to explore what they want to have in a relationship, what a healthy relationship can look like, and it does provide them with great growth opportunities to learn how to behave in relationships for as they grow up. But the problem is when you have the unhealthy and abusive things taking place in those relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, relationships are hard for anyone, right? That's kind of the whole premise of a lot of the things that we talk about. Relationships are difficult. And then you're taking teenagers who don't have, you know, the history, the learned experiences to kind of handle those things, and putting them into these sometimes kind of adult situations. And they can be prone to having, you know, some issues that can lead to violence.
Yeah. So, Lauren, do you want to then kind of jump in here and just kind of discuss with us what some of those short-term impacts of teen dating violence that can arise or take place?
Yeah, so I think I would say definitely everyone's experience is going to be unique in how they and how that impacts them. But from what we know, you know, from research, the short-term impacts are a lot of social isolation from family and friends, struggles in school, feelings of depression, and low self-esteem.
Yeah, and I really want to hit on those social impacts because that can be one of the biggest barriers to teens and also not even wanting to discuss being abused in their relationships. Because if they're worried about committing quote-unquote social suicide by telling a friend that they're being abused in their relationship, or their parents have told them they don't want them dating and that they're being abused in the relationship, they feel like they can't turn to them as well without potentially getting in further trouble. These are barriers to them not wanting to talk about that abuse, and them not talking about it is going to really kind of layer on those other things that you listed, that depression, that harm, that hurt to their grades. So we're going to see those things when students don't feel comfortable enough sharing what they're experiencing.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know that that's one of the dynamics of abuse is pressuring the victim not to listen to their parents, not to hang out with their friends. And if every time that the victim is hanging out with a certain person is causing a fight in that relationship, sooner or later, they're going to say, it's just not worth it anymore. I'm not going to hang out with my friends anymore.
And, you know, generally, even if someone has a decent relationship with their parents, And then they get into an abusive relationship, and now their partner's saying, you don't need to listen to your parents. Just come over, lie to them, sneak out, tell them you're going to a friend's house and come over and see me. These things happen, and they happen frequently. And, you know, you have the potential of, you know, changing a teenager's entire personality.
Yeah. And one of the things I'll add in here, too, is just to kind of give our audience an idea of how big the scope of this problem is that about 1 in 4 teens have experienced some form of physical, emotional, or sexual abuse from a dating partner. That's also just being reported on, like, random surveys and stuff that they have been given, not, like, you know, police reporting, not reporting to, like, higher up figures like principals or counselors and stuff. That's just students self-reporting that they've experienced some of those things. So that number can be higher, but we know it's at least 1 in 4, which means there's a chance that if you have teenagers and you're listening to this, that one of your kids may be experiencing or have experienced this. So having discussions with them is going to be a huge step in helping mitigate some of those short-term factors, but also helping mitigate some of those longer-term factors.
In addition to that, 1/3 of high school students report having a peer or friend who has experienced dating violence as well. So even if your teen doesn't experience it, chances are they know someone who is experiencing it or who has experienced it. And talking to your kids about it can help reduce that stigma that other teens feel when trying to talk about it. If your teen now knows what to look for and, you know, has a little bit of understanding about the things that go on, they're more likely to be able to be a support system for a friend who is experiencing it.
And we know that having those support systems is going to be of great help to those who are experiencing dating abuse. So then, Lauren, transitioning to the long-term impacts, because the long-term impacts, there's a bit more of discussion that can be had with them just because of how numerous long-term impacts can be. What would be some of those long-term impacts then?
Some of the long-term impacts, I would say, would be substance use, poor self-esteem, definitely risk for future unhealthy relationships, and that will kind of perpetuate that cycle of domestic violence through generations.
Yeah, we know from research, from studies that have been done, that those who experience dating violence early in their life are at a greater risk for having it happen again to them, and multiple times as well, not just like a one-off thing. Like, it can keep happening, and that's nothing against the victim. It's just that once you've experienced that type of abuse, it almost becomes more acceptable to you to accept those behaviors when they happen in another relationship. It's like, oh, it happened in my past one. I guess it's going to happen in this one too, or it's always going to happen in relationships. Or when the relationships that you've seen modeled in your life perpetuate those unhealthy behaviors, you may learn that those unhealthy behaviors are okay or acceptable in a relationship. So you don't even then recognize them as bad. So by the time it gets to the really bad stuff that we recognize, they may not be able to get out of the relationship.
Absolutely. It's normalized throughout their life if that's all that they've seen, if that's all that's been modeled to them throughout their childhood, that becomes normal to them. And even I think if it's not modeled to them in their relationships, a lot of that can be seen in the media, in movies and TV shows, and that just further normalizes those unhealthy relationship dynamics, and it even romanticizes some of them.
It's one of my favorite things to ruin for people when I do presentations is discussing Disney princesses, specifically like the older Disney princesses like Cinderella, Snow White, Jasmine, and just pointing out that every message that you get in those movies is just not great. Like, I've never done a presentation when I ask people, it's like, is it romantic if a guy were to stalk a city looking for you after you lost a shoe by dancing with him one time at a dance one night? They're like, oh, no, that's creepy. That's crazy. It's like, that's the plot of Cinderella. Like, the main plot is this dude using his power to stalk a city to find this woman.
Yeah.
Who he then can't even recognize because the only way he knows it's her is if the shoe fits. It's just crazy.
Which is also just weird because, like, you mean to tell me that there's literally nobody else in this entire kingdom that has the exact same shoe size as her?
Sounds unrealistic to me.
Yeah. But the other thing that I'll point out too is that, and we mentioned it in our past episode on teen dating violence, but when children learn from their parents that if a boy is pulling your hair or teasing you, it means he likes you, or we allow for our boys to pick on girls who they are attracted to, we teach them both then that those are acceptable behaviors in a relationship. It's not acceptable to tease or be mean to somebody you care about or like, but that's what we teach them, so they learn that those things are acceptable. And those are going to be the earlier signs of an unhealthy or abusive relationship. So we actively teach kids to just ignore the early signs.
Yeah, and that those signs are forms of affection. Or, you know, when we push children to go give, you know, grandma a hug and a kiss for that nice gift that they got them, and we're teaching children then that physical affection is the payment you pay for receiving this gift. And that follows kids into their teen years. It follows them into adulthood. And so just some of those things that we teach kids early that maybe don't even necessarily seem harmful at the time are really impacting their future lives.
Yeah. So kind of getting out of the tangent there a little bit, but jumping to the long-term impacts then. When you mentioned earlier that it can lead to poor grades and stuff or poor performance in school, if somebody is in an abusive relationship through a good portion of middle school or high school, they're going to have poor grades, they're going to have poor self-esteem and depression. And anybody out there who has had poor self-esteem or depression through high school, you can probably recognize that your grades aren't going to be that great. And if your grades aren't that great throughout high school, and we tell kids that you need to perform well in high school because you need to go to college, we're adding on more layers of poor self-esteem. Well, I'm not performing well in high school, so now I'm not going to be able to get into that college that I wanted to get into, or I'm not smart enough to go to college anyway, so I'm not even going to worry about it. So that long-term impact really looks like potentially harming their whole future career outcome. And I don't think that's something that we often talk about when we're talking about, like, oh, they perform poorly in school, they get bad grades because of the abuse they're experiencing, but that's a big deal.
Absolutely. And then when you're looking at, you know, potential behavior issues that go along with it, you know, missed school or, you know, poor attention, things like that. If that happens in, you know, say middle school, early high school, those reputations can kind of start to follow them. So even if that child, that teen, somehow finds their way out of that relationship and tries to, you know, make those changes to have a healthier mental state, that reputation of being a bad student, of being the one who misses class, of being the one who causes disruptions is going to follow them. And then that is going to affect them from trying to dig out of that kind of slump that they were in.
Yeah, I would say the messages that they get from peers, you know, with the reputation that they would get of being a bad student, coupled with those harmful statements that they're hearing from their partner of, you know, you're not going to amount to anything, you're no good at anything, that really sets them up for failure and for further problems with self-esteem even into adulthood.
Well, even when you think about like what their classmates might be saying to based on their reputation, if part of an abusive relationship is the abusive person cutting them off from their friends and their peers don't understand that, their peers then may just start to see them as a bad friend. So now they're hearing from their friends that they're a bad friend, and they're hearing from their partner that they're a bad partner. So that just layers on the harmful things to their self-esteem too.
Yeah, and that makes it more difficult for them. If they are able to leave that relationship, it makes it more difficult for them to go back to that friend group, because their friends now have these thoughts about them that they are a bad friend, that they chose their relationship over their friends.
Mm-hmm. And then if we're looking at the long-term impacts of that, if I grow up through middle school and high school believing that I'm a bad friend because that's what I'm hearing from my friends, it's going to be really detrimental to me forming further friendships with new people. Because if I feel like I'm a bad friend, well, then I'm not going to try to make friends because I'm a bad person. So there's a lot of pieces that can be woven into somebody who is experiencing teen dating violence, but it's not until we look at the larger picture and what those outcomes might be that we can really see how detrimental somebody experiencing dating abuse, especially in their teen years, can be.
Yeah, and then if we want to look at a lifelong effect, there are many teens who are in abusive relationships who have been pressured into sexual activities that they weren't ready for, that they weren't, you know, maybe willing to do. And so now we're looking at, you know, unintended pregnancies, and we're looking at STI transmission. And, you know, that goes for both male and female. And, you know, then you've got these teen pregnancies that happen, and that's going to affect their entire lives. You know, I mean, whether they, no matter what they choose to do with that pregnancy, it's still going to affect them. And that's something that is probably going to affect them for their entire life.
So, Lauren, you have experience working with teens. So what can you tell our audience then who is listening about what teens say or what they talk about when they're coming into seeing you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say majority of the teens, obviously with respect to their privacy, I don't want to speak on any specific client. But a lot of teens are coming in for other reasons, for feeling, because they're struggling in school, because they're feeling depressed and they don't know why. And they're not even realizing that their relationship is the kind of the root of why all these other problems are, or all these other issues are arising for them. And when we kind of talk about healthy and unhealthy qualities of the relationship, they kind of start to see, some of the unhealthy qualities and how that is impacting them.
Awesome. Thank you. And one of the things that I want to use that then for, Lauren, just kind of hit on to our audience how important prevention and talking to your kids about healthy and unhealthy behaviors is you said that they're showing up not to talk about their relationship, but the impacts of that relationship, without even realizing that those things were unhealthy or an abusive relationship. So having discussions with our kids, with our teenagers, about what behaviors are acceptable or unacceptable to have happen or to do in a relationship is incredibly important. And then modeling those behaviors also in our own relationships is important for them. Because if they can learn from you, before Amanda and I even go into their classrooms to discuss healthy and unhealthy relationships, if they have a baseline knowledge already, we're not having to help them unlearn any behaviors. We're just helping reinforce the things that they've already learned. But if they're coming from a foundational piece of not even knowing or believing some of the things that we are telling them are okay or acceptable. Well, now we got to help them unlearn those things before we can even get to the point where they can understand what behaviors are acceptable. They have to unlearn behaviors that aren't.
Absolutely. That education is so important about red flags, and also teaching teens that it's okay to really look at your relationship and question some of the things. You know, no relationship is going to be perfect. Every relationship has its issues. But look at your relationship and think about, are these things healthy, unhealthy? What's, you know, how does this relationship impact me?
Yeah. And that's why I said at the beginning of this too, that teen dating relationships are a great opportunity for them to learn about healthy relationships, because if they can recognize the unhealthy stuff while they're a teenager, they're definitely not going to accept that stuff when they grow up. They've learned already that those things they don't want to have happen. So this isn't to dissuade anybody from, quote unquote, allowing their kid to be in a dating relationship throughout middle school or high school, because they should have those opportunities to explore those relationships. But doing it in a manner where they understand the healthy things. So then, Lauren, jumping into the next question that I had for you. What are some ways that parents can kind of approach the conversation with their kids if they may be recognizing that some of their behaviors have changed since starting the relationship? Or how can they respond to a potential disclosure from their child?
I would say ways to approach the conversation. It's always good for parents to know the warning signs of abuse so that they can, you know, approach their teen with that and say, I've noticed some of these things. Are you okay? And don't be afraid to ask that, bring that up, because that might be what the teen needs to open that conversation and feel comfortable talking about it with you. So knowing the signs, I think, is a big part of that. If a teen does disclose relationship abuse, I would say the most important thing, first of all, is just start by believing them. Let them know that you believe them. That's one of the biggest reasons we know why teens don't disclose, is the fear of not being believed. So just simply saying, I believe you, I'm here to support you, can be so important for them to hear.
Yeah. And just one of the things that I'll add to that is when that disclosure happens, also asking them what they want you to do. What do you want from me? How can I help? Instead of just going immediately to, well, you need to break up with this person, you need to end the relationship, and get really defensive, which I know can be very difficult because that is your child. That is probably the one person that you will be the most defensive about, is you want to protect them, you want to keep them safe. But when you use the phrases of things like you need to break up with them, or you need to do X, Y, or Z, you're doing the exact same thing their abusive partner's doing. You're telling them what to do, which, yes, you're a parent. You're supposed to be able to tell your kids what to do. This is a situation where you want to really make sure that you're working alongside them instead of pushing them to do something. Because not only is this going to be a good learning opportunity for them to know that they can absolutely trust you and come to you when they're experiencing something, but it also lets them know that there are going to be people who are going to want to help them. So sure, maybe you aren't able to provide them with every answer, but now they know that they can trust you. So they may be able to trust somebody like Lauren, who is actually trained to be able to help them work through some of the things they've experienced.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point about meeting them where they're at. If they're not ready to talk about leaving that relationship, don't pressure them into talking about that. You know, you want to make it clear that you're there to support them no matter what. Whatever they need from you, that you're there for them.
And I don't know if you have ever tried to tell a teenager what to do, but it doesn't usually end well. You know, they're in a time in their life where they're trying to figure out who they are, establish their independence. And, you know, the last thing you want to do is kind of, you know, wedge that in between in your relationship. So just, you know, understanding that I think it's like 80% of young women who are in abusive relationships continue to be in that relationship after the abuse occurs. So most likely it's not something that they're going to talk to you and just decide, you know what, all of a sudden I do need out of this relationship. Maybe it happens, but most likely they're going to have to work through some things before they can figure out how to safely leave that relationship.
So then, Lauren, just one final question for you today. What are some ways that we can help mitigate those long-term or those short-term impacts of teen dating violence?
Yeah, I would say always be aware of the language that you use in social situations. You want to present yourself as an ally for survivors wherever you are, because you never know when a survivor might be in the room with you. And showing that you are a supportive person and you are a safe person can be what a teen needs to see to be able to approach you and talk about that with you. So I think, you know, just presenting yourself as an ally, I think, is a really important thing that everybody can do to help mitigate some of those effects and help teens get the support that they need.
And just one thing to add to that is, you know, like with that language, normalizing those conversations, you know, start with your children, your preteens, and then into the teenage years, having open conversations about the relationships that they're in. Don't make it so that your children are afraid to talk to you about it because they're afraid they're going to get in trouble for even having a boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, because then they're less likely to talk to you about the things that they need the help with. That conversation doesn't have to be awkward, you know, later in life if it's normalized from a younger age.
Yeah. And just one piece that I would add to it is that if your teenager feels comfortable having those conversations with you and they have a lot of close friends, there is the chance then that some of their friends may also feel comfortable, or at least more comfortable, sharing that with you than with one of their own parents. Because maybe they are afraid to tell their parent, but they know their friend's parent believed and listened to them, so maybe I can trust them. I can tell you from just the relationship that I've had with some of my friend's parents growing up that I viewed them as like another parent of my own. So I knew I could trust them with anything. So your teenager may have friends that view you as like a second mom or a second dad. So there's a chance they may disclose that to you. So really understanding how to be an effective ally to somebody with that disclosure is going to be incredibly important. Maybe not just to your kid, but to their friends too.
Yeah. And with that, I would also add, it's so important to know about your local resources. If you are approached by a teen, you know where your local domestic and sexual violence agency is, and also know the laws in your state regarding mental health services for teens. Like, for example, in Michigan, teens can receive mental health counseling for 3 months or 12 sessions, whichever comes first, without parent consent. Which is something that a lot of teens worry about, is not wanting their parents to know that they are talking to a counselor, or that, you know, that they're in an abusive relationship. So being able to offer that information to a teen can be really helpful for them and can empower them to seek help.
And then, you know, maybe during those 12 sessions or 3 months that they're talking to somebody, that counselor can help them figure out ways to talk to their parents about it. And, you know, they might just be really nervous and say, you know, I don't know what to do. I don't know who I can go to or talk to. My parents are going to be so mad at me. That counselor can help ease their mind. They can, you know, be an ally to that conversation with the parent. And, you know, sometimes that makes it easier. And then just one more thing about, you know, being an ally to teens is you might be thinking like, well, I don't have a teenager. You don't have to have a teenager. You know teens. There are teens somewhere in your life, whether you're an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent or a teacher or the person who works at, you know, the local 7-Eleven. There are teens that you see every day in your life. So being an ally for everyone outside of just, you know, those parent and teen relationships.
Awesome. So thanks, Lauren, for joining us today. Do you have anything you want to tell our audience before we sign out of here?
No, I don't think so. I just want to say thank you, Sean, to you and Amanda for inviting me on. This was a great discussion.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us today, Lauren, and thank you all for listening. Please feel free to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TouchySubsPod, and email us any questions, comments, or concerns to TouchySubjectsPodcast@gmail.com.
And in the meantime, don't be afraid to challenge, ask, and discuss when it comes to touchy subjects.